The Bible Study on KFUO Radio is underwritten by Concordia Seminary, St. Louis, centered in the gospel of Jesus Christ in faithfulness, servanthood, responsiveness, and excellence, Concordia Seminary. And once again, it's your turn to ask the pastor with open phone lines for you at 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our guest this hour, Pastor Kristen Prohm at St. John's Lutheran Church in Britton, South Dakota. Pastor also serves at Peace Lutheran Church in Hecla, South Dakota. Good morning, Pastor.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us today. Let's find out a little bit about your territory there, your region. Where are you in South Dakota?
We are in the northeastern corner of South Dakota, about 17 miles south of the North Dakota border and 40 miles west of the Minnesota border.
And the next big town is?
Aberdeen, South Dakota.
Aberdeen. Yeah.
Aberdeen. 60 right. miles away still.
We had a pastor on the air from Aberdeen just a few weeks ago.
Oh, yes.
Mm. What's your background? Where are you from originally?
I am born and raised from Fort Wayne, Indiana, of all places.
Did you go to seminary there?
I went to seminary there, but I was not born and raised Lutheran, so I actually did not know much about the seminary or its presence in Fort Wayne until I was an older adult.
What was your early tradition?
I come from a non-denominational background, the Church of God, Anderson, Indiana.
Uh-huh. And what brought you to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod?
Oh, like all good good pastors and converts to Lutheranism, my wife. So many, many good women convert or bring their husbands into the Lutheran confession, and mine was one of them.
Conversion via evangelism via marriage, huh?
Absolutely.
Well, that's great. Now, do you have family now? You have children?
Yes, we have four children. They age range from 9 till 3. So 9, 7, 4, and 3.
And is this a second career for you?
It kind of is. I was not in my first career very long, but yes, I went to Purdue University there in Indiana, and I majored in aeronautical technology.
Wow.
So I had a background in aviation maintenance and in flight, kind of a double degree there.
Did you work for one of the airline makers, like Boeing?
I did not. After the university, I took a job as a quality assurance chief inspector, if you will, for a wheel and brake overhaul facility in Kentucky, Louisville, Kentucky.
And not to pigeonhole you, but it sounds like you're rather analytical in your approach to things.
You could say that, which stems to my exegesis major in the seminary, kind of more analytical-minded.
Uh-huh. And what are your areas of interest when it comes to theology?
Well, as I just mentioned, I do like the exegesis. I do like studying the original text as much as possible and doing Bible studies in the actual text.
Have you ever had a chance to see the Dead Sea Scrolls?
I did. I went in 2007 with another one of our guests that is on KFUO often, is Reverend Nabil Noor.
Oh, yeah.
So I went on one of his tours with him, and we did see the Dead Sea Scrolls in Jerusalem.
Nabil from Armour, South Dakota.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he's had a big influence on a lot of pastors.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about your parishes here.
Well, my parish in Britton, South Dakota.
Are these listed by alphabetical order?
How do you mean?
Well, I wonder, when you're serving two parishes, which do you list first?
Well, that's a good question. It's considered more of a hub ministry where my call is to Britton, South Dakota, and St. John's. But yet, tacked onto that is the Hecla one, where they commission. Well, I wouldn't say commission, but they call me through the call of Britton.
Uh huh. So you're kind of on loan from Britton.
Correct.
Okay. And what's significant about your parish?
Well, it's a small town, rural community. Mm-hmm. So you really have a lot of face time with the community, with everybody around. So everybody knows each other. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows, with that, of course, everybody knows your business as well.
Knows your sins, perhaps.
Hopefully not as much. But they certainly knew and talked to me about one of my children being born before I even brought him home from the hospital.
How about that?
So it's really interesting.
And what do folks do there to make a living?
Mostly farming. It's mostly a farming community. But there are two major industries here. Horton Industry, which makes cooling and refrigerant units for those tractor trailers.
Uh-huh.
And then there's a Truss Pro that makes the trusses for homes.
Okay.
And they were featured on Home Makeover.
Oh, really?
Yes.
And any cattle ranches up that way?
Oh, there are plenty of cattle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's a little bit different from where I'm, you know, where I'm from in Fort Wayne, Indiana, you know, being a city boy. Hmm. I see ranches and cattle where I don't see where they belong to. You know, such open range out here, I don't know whose they belong. And, you know, that's just different to me when somebody says they farm a small amount of land, only 2,000 acres.
Wow. So wide open spaces there, big sky country.
Absolutely.
Mm. Now, have you always lived in the Midwest or there in South Dakota, or did you ever make your way to the coasts?
I only made my way to the coast through visitation. I've always lived in the Midwest, Indiana, Michigan, Kentucky, and South Dakota now.
Well, KFUO Radio, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, is coast to coast, in fact, global with our internet streaming. And there's a story today that really encompasses the entire United States, and I want to set this up for you and then get your perspective on it. And marriage and divorce rates rise in the South, the headline reads, but the trend is lower in the Northeast. And this is due to census information. Where you live may influence your attitudes and actions toward marriage and divorce more than you think, suggests a report out today that gives the clearest picture in 20 years about the changes of marriage and divorce across the United States. The report from the U.S. Census finds distinct regional differences. States in the Northeast have the lowest marriage and divorce rates for both men and women, and the South has the highest. New Jersey is among those with the lowest for both sexes. States with high rates include Alabama, Arkansas, Georgia, Kentucky, Mississippi, Oklahoma, Tennessee, and Texas. Are you at all surprised by that?
I'm not too terribly surprised, to be honest.
Hmm. This does not mean you can move to the Northeast if you want your marriage to last, says sociologist Andrew Cherlin of Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, who has reviewed the data. In the South, people tend to marry earlier and often have less education, both of which increase divorce risk, he says. Those in the Northeast tend to have more education and marry later. The lesson here is that a higher level of education leads to more stable families. Would you agree with the sociologist?
Not completely. You know, there is a little bit to say about the education, but really, divorce is a spiritual issue. So it would not rest upon education. It would rest upon the love of God and the love of His commandments and the love for one another.
And yet it's a little bit counterintuitive here, because the states I mentioned in the South are what's termed the Bible Belt.
Correct. But you also have to take in consideration maybe what that particular area of the country teach concerning God's commandments.
I see. That may be more legalistic, perhaps.
Possibly. Okay. I don't want to overgeneralize.
Right, yes. The lesson here is that a higher level of education leads to more stable families. That's where I left off. The analysis is the first such comprehensive look at state and national data since a 1991 report from the National Center for Health Statistics, which then stopped collecting such data. After a 20-year gap, census began collecting the data reflected in this report based on 3 million households in the 2009 American Community Survey. And because data were collected during the height of the recession, it's possible they might even understate the rates, Cherlin says. Single people have postponed marriage. Married people have postponed divorce. Have you seen that in your own locale?
No.
No.
No, not that I have seen reflected here. But it is curious to know what other factors they may have taken into consideration.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, in the South, you have other things such as the warmer weather and more activities outside. And, you know, not that we like to say that this is a contributing factor, but you may ask, what do people wear, even?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That may give lust to the eyes or, you know, things of that nature.
And I can understand what you're saying there, because I have family in Florida, and it's different down there. They'll be the first to tell you.
Yes, there's a lot more skin to be seen in southern states, you know, to put it that way.
Mm.
And a lot harsher winters in the northern states. So you do stay together, and you do find things to do together.
And I wonder if work ethic has anything to do with it.
In what regard?
Well, I would think that people in your region have a very strong work ethic.
And very long hours.
And perhaps that leads to more stability in relationships.
Again, it's still a spiritual issue, because people can divorce and still have the same work ethic.
Mm-hmm. So give us a profile of your area there in northeastern South Dakota.
Profile in regards to
marriage and relationships. Do you have much divorce there?
Well, it's going to probably be the same cross-section as you see in other places.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are divorces, even the members within the church, you know, they'll have second marriages. Again, it always boils down to how they're raised, spiritually speaking, and how they see marriage in God's eyes, or through God's eyes. So if they're educated in the sense of spiritually educated, not necessarily secular education, then, you know, it's a much greater importance for them to keep the marriage and to fight for the marriage and to never even use the term divorce in their marriage.
Do you think that people who live in rural communities, who are dependent on, nature, the weather, growing conditions and things like that, tend to have more reverence for God than people on the coasts?
That may be only in the sense that you don't have as many activities that are pulling you away.
Mm. Not as many distractions, you're saying.
Not as many, but, you know, they are growing because of sports. You know, sports are a major activity across the nation. And when that becomes a replacement for spiritual things, getting together for church, getting together for Bible studies, when these distractions get in the way, you know, here come the evil.
I've had the opportunity to live in agrarian communities and also to take the radio station to some of those communities in southern Illinois. And I get this impression that people in agrarian communities tend to take church more seriously than people in the cities.
Sure. And I think to some degree that has to do with family connections as well.
Mm.
In the rural communities, families stick together a lot closer. They don't move away as well, unless they cannot be on the family farm. You know, they grow up together, they work together, and they live near each other for most of their life. And so they have a really close family-knit group, and when they all go to church together, you almost have the family pressure of going to church together as well. Or not necessarily the pressure, but you have that love of being together with your family.
And as a pastor, you mentioned that you are afforded the opportunity to have more face time with your parishioners. Do you think that the smaller churches allow pastors to become closer to their parishioners?
I do think that you get an opportunity to know people better, but I'm not necessarily sure that means their commitment to church is greater. For example, when I grew up in the cities, I never missed church myself. So there is a devotion or a love of God that draws you to church to begin with. But in a smaller community, you do get to know each other personally a lot better.
Yeah. In communities like yours, I would imagine that high school football is a pretty big deal.
Absolutely.
Is it? Well, let me share this story with you, and then we'll find out what's going on in your neighborhood.
Okay.
The Freedom From Religion Foundation is pleased that a Mississippi school district has halted prayers over the public address system at football games and other school functions. The Commercial Appeal reports that the foundation had warned DeSoto County School District officials that Supreme Court decisions prohibiting school-sponsored prayer were being violated. In response, the school board said Monday that the system would enforce an existing policy prohibiting use of the public address system to broadcast prayers before football games. The first home games of the season were last Friday at Lake Cormorant and DeSoto Central High Schools, and they did not include pregame prayers over the public address speakers. Is that an issue in your neighborhood?
Not as prevalent, no, because we are pretty secluded from a lot of things that go on in the more populated areas of the country. But as we all know, it doesn't take too many people to raise a fuss before it becomes an issue.
Mm-hmm.
We've been fortunate not to have the rest of the world so closely related to us and some of these problems, you know, face to face.
There's no mosques there in South Dakota where you are.
That's correct.
Are most people Christian?
Yes.
And so this wouldn't be an issue in a public high school, perhaps?
Not as much.
Mm-hmm. Are there any parochial schools there?
Not in this area.
No, none at all.
Aberdeen would be the closest, and like I mentioned earlier, that's still 60 miles away from us, so we don't really have that option.
So children in your parish attending your confirmation classes are going to public schools, and perhaps they're running into this evolutionary theory on a regular basis in science class. Do you talk about that with them?
Oh, that's definitely one of the major issues that we talk about. And most of the children do not even know that they're being taught that doctrine. So one of the first things that I talk about when we talk about creation is I ask, well, how old are Adam and Eve? How old are these trees that are fruit-bearing? How old do they need to be? Because they're all farming community out here. They understand things take time to grow and to produce.
Mm-hmm.
But when I ask them about creation, how old are these trees? How many rings would they have? You know, these children don't really think about it, and I say they are hours old, even though they may have many rings. They are mature. They are fruit-producing. Adam and Eve are mature adults. So we definitely talk about how the school system, and much more than that, you know, the children's cartoons are teaching an evolutionary doctrine.
I hadn't considered that.
Yes, and I may be a little bit more familiar with that, having such young children. I get to preview a lot of these cartoons that they're watching.
How old are your kids?
9 through 3. I have 4 children.
Oh, wow.
So I've had a long, probably, you know, 9 years worth of watching some children's programs, sifting through what would be evolution and what would not be, and some of these ethics that television is trying to teach our children.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've got a great little incubator there going for you so that you can be tuned into the culture.
Oh, absolutely. It'll keep me tuned in with the young kids for quite a while, I think.
Yeah. And is it difficult to get kids to come to confirmation these days?
Not in this area. You know, it always goes back to the parents' commitment to teach their children, the parents' commitment to bring their children to confirmation. And around here, I've had the privilege, I have children from 3 different communities, 3 different counties and high schools and middle schools.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents have been really committed to bringing their children to confirmation.
And are they traditional Lutherans? Is that why? Is that a strong tradition there?
You could say that. I don't necessarily want to say that traditional versus something else would reflect upon their commitment.
No, I guess what I'm asking is there a lot of church hopping in your neck of the woods? Do people switch from one church to another much?
Yeah, you could say that they do in a sense, but they don't have another LCMS church to hop to.
Mm-hmm.
That's one of the things with the rural community, with the next Lutheran LCMS church being a minimum of 45 miles away. If they want to hop churches, they're going to a different faith.
Mm. And are there any so-called non-denominational churches that are gaining in popularity there in South Dakota?
There is one in this area. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say necessarily that they're gaining in population, but they are offering a different confession, mm-hmm. different worship style. You know, everything that we hear about with the national programs and entertainment style of worship.
Mm. And do you talk about that with your elders and your parishioners? The distinction.
Well, we have to, yes, especially in such a small community, because they work with these people. Oh. They rub elbows with them. They drink coffee at the gas stations with them. It is a part of their lives as much as this church is. They need to know who their neighbors are. They need to know why we go to this church versus one of the other six or seven churches in this area.
Yeah, I took my mother breakfast last Sunday morning, and she doesn't change the channels much anymore. She's getting to where she's having trouble with numbers.
Okay.
And she points to the television, and she said, "You know who that guy is?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, Joel Osteen." She says, "Yeah. Oh, he's really nice."
Sure.
And I wonder, do your parishioners watch some of these TV evangelists?
They do, as anybody would, if, you know, especially when they cannot get to church and they still want to be part of church, they will look for something. And unfortunately, not everybody knows what to look for.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start to settle on emotional things. Oh, this guy is nice, or this guy looks nice, or this guy sounds nice, or they have good music. And you know, you don't necessarily get to teach people as a pastor what shows they're watching and what to look out for when they're watching these things. Not that they're all bad. You know, I enjoy some shows that are not our denomination, but, you know, you watch them with a filter, a doctrinal filter, so that you know what you're receiving and what to reject.
And you point out those distinctions between style and substance, perhaps.
I do as best as I can. And here in South Dakota, we are fortunate to have a program called Main Street Living that is on every Sunday. And that takes a cross-section of South Dakota district pastors, and we all share FaceTime on the television.
Oh, and so you've done that?
Yes. Yeah, a few times. And so I try to lead and steer my parishioners that are either homebound or they can't make it to church on a Sunday to watch for our own LCMS program.
And I suppose you'd have local radio stations. Do you ever get an opportunity to do a devotional thought on a local station?
Actually, we are pretty far out for our local radio station.
Oh, you are?
Yes, we did not have one of those.
Well, you've got to tell your parishioners about KFUO online.
Oh, absolutely.
And with an iPhone or iPad, they can get a free app. Take us anywhere they go.
And with the technology and the tractors today, they could listen to it as they're farming.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to take a quick time out. We're going to regroup, open up the phone lines here. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Listeners, I didn't mean to dominate the first half of the program with questions about South Dakota, but I do find that part of the country fascinating because I've never been there. We'll be right back with our guest, Pastor Kristen Prum from St. John's, Britton, South Dakota, and Peace Hecla, South Dakota, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We'll be right back.
Servanthood is a core value of Concordia Seminary. To be a servant is alien to so many people in our society. Even some clergy take on authoritarian airs. But Jesus, Son of God and Lord of all, came as a servant. We want Concordia graduates to model servanthood to their congregations and to their communities. Servanthood, that's the Christian way.
Feminism promised to deliver, and it did. Women have more freedom, education, and power, but research reports less happiness. Hi, I'm Phyllis Wallace. More money, liberated by the hookup culture, and even freedom from childcare. Why, then, are we less happy? Suzanne Banker and Dr. Meg Meeker reveal the unsettling flip side of feminism next time, Woman to Woman.
Saturday mornings at 9:30 on KFUO Radio.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
During the first 6 months of this year, 10% more unborn babies were spared from abortion in Nebraska compared with last year. The reason is likely because of their new law. It stopped late-term abortion after 20 weeks because clearly the baby can feel the excruciating pain of being aborted. Nebraska was the home of notorious late-term abortionist Leroy Carhart, but he moved his gruesome killing business to Maryland after the law passed. Other states have also stopped abortion after 20 weeks, and pro-abortion activists have yet to challenge it in court. They're terrified the court will uphold it, and with good reason. America's more pro-life because we've been educating them to the reality of abortion. We've also opened new avenues of options for mothers to choose life.
Check out Life Issues on Facebook and stay more informed than you've ever been.
Uninsured. I'm Steve Coleman with today's Religion Roundup. It's expected to cost millions of dollars to repair uninsured earthquake damage to Washington National Cathedral, and the cathedral's dean says
there's nothing in our budget that would allow us to step up and do this, and so we will be turning to people across the country to help us restore this cathedral to everything it's supposed to be.
The Reverend Sam Lloyd says that while the landmark cathedral wasn't devastated by the earthquake,
this is a reminder that no finite building is God. It points to something far beyond and far more powerful than us.
A Mennonite college in Indiana that stopped playing the national anthem at sporting events will play America the Beautiful instead. The president of Goshen College says America the Beautiful fits better with the pacifist tradition of the church-affiliated school. Some Goshen students and graduates objected to the Star Spangled Banner being played because its lyrics include references to war. I'm Steve Coleman.
And Jesus said to them, "Come aside by yourselves to a deserted place and rest a while, for there were many coming and going. They didn't even have time to eat. You're busy. Your schedule is tight. But God's isn't. He doesn't have to fit you in. So take Him up on the invitation to come aside by yourselves and rest a while." I'm Mark Hawkinson. I'll help you do that on this Sunday's Jubilation from 1 to 4 p.m. on KFUO Radio.
The Alzheimer's Association St. Louis Chapter will hold its annual Walk to End Alzheimer's at various locations around the metro area soon. There's a walk at Washington, Missouri on September 10th at the Washington City Pavilion. The St. Louis Walk will be held at Busch Stadium on September 17th. And the Walk to End Alzheimer's scheduled at SIU Edwardsville is set for September 24th. Registration information is available online at www.alzstl.org.
It's Ask the Pastor on the Bible Study, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod on KFUO Radio. And our guest today is Pastor Kristen Prum from St. John's Lutheran Church in Britton, South Dakota, and Peace Lutheran Church in Hecla, South Dakota. So you enjoy reading the original text, so I suppose you're very good in Greek and Hebrew?
No, I would never claim to be.
What is the attraction for you?
Well, with my upbringing, growing up in a non-denominational church that I did, there was nothing that I would consider doctrinal classes to take. We would grow up in Sunday school and learn the biblical stories as they were presented, but never learned doctrine, never learned what our church taught, never learned what baptism was, never learned what the Lord's Supper meant, even though as a child you were even allowed to take the Lord's Supper. But I would grow up asking some of these questions, what does this mean? And it depends on who you ask, you may get a different story from every person you ask.
So there was no catechism in the church you grew up in?
Absolutely none.
I suppose you really embrace that little blue book.
You betcha. Uh-huh. Of course, now today we have the maroon color, but... So I grew up asking these questions and had no answers. But then when you do ask a pastor or another leader, and you start questioning with biblical references, but this says this. The problem that I ran into was that one of these people would always say, well, in the original Greek, it means this. And then your conversation stops, because if you didn't know it, now you're facing an authority figure and they have the floor. And no matter what else they said, you have to believe them because they're the ones who threw out the Greek card.
So it sounds like a lot of folks that you grew up around would do self-interpretation of the Bible. Whatever they felt it meant is what it meant.
That is correct. And when they, and what I've learned now is when they threw out this term in the Greek, all they did was a one-word study. And they would explain what the Greek meant, but they wouldn't actually know the Greek.
And so I suppose you wouldn't get the full context.
Correct.
If you're just looking at one word.
Correct. I had a pastor tell me when Jesus was on the cross and he said, "Tetelestai" means it shall be done forevermore and evermore. The meaning he got pretty close to correct, but he did not say why it meant that. You know, the word itself just means it has been fulfilled. And it's in that passive participle, which means something that acts, this action in the past has continuing results into the future. But they could not explain that. They just said, this Greek word means this. And then, like I said,
it sounds like just fragmented theology that's not all knit together the way the Bible really is.
And like so many people do, you know, they take what they learned, that one little thing, to prove their own points. And that's how they would study the original text.
Oh, I'll bet you just loved going to seminary then. Did you have a good time?
I did. I was scared, to be honest with you. I did not know I was going to be a pastor. It just kind of came upon me as a whirlwind. And in a two-month period of time, I went from being a mailman delivering mail to sitting in Greek, in summer Greek. So in 2 months' time, I had no idea that that's what was going to happen to me. So it was a little bit overwhelming, a little bit scary. But as I'm learning Greek, I thought, oh, well, this is what I was facing when I was growing up. People not knowing the context and the original language and how it all fits together in the big picture.
Interesting. I can kind of identify with you. Having grown up in the meat industry and then becoming a broadcaster, it took me years to consider myself a broadcaster.
Sure.
I thought the first few years, well, I'm really a meat cutter, trying to be a wannabe kind of broadcaster. I'm not really a broadcaster. Did you go through something similar?
Oh, absolutely. I go through it about every week.
Oh, still?
I was told by one of my seminary professors, Dr. David Scare, that he said, really, many times you don't necessarily know what you're doing unless you're in it for at least 5 years. And I have to admit, it did take quite a few years for me to feel like I really am these people's pastor. They really did call me. Yeah. God really did call me into this. And I still face that every week thinking, I'm not worthy.
And perhaps it's at those funerals where you really feel the impact of your ministry.
You bet. You touch so many people's lives, not just those of your own congregation, but all their family members as well. And that's a real witness to the gospel. Especially in a community that's so closely knit, like the rural communities. You know, you get a lot of people to come to these funerals who may have never heard the Word of God or who may have never heard it correctly.
Forgive me for not remembering the name of your colleague in Aberdeen.
Reverend Yice Tingland.
Yes, yes. And I Googled his name.
Okay.
And I told him that there are 5 pages of your funeral services.
Oh.
5 pages of listings on the web of all the various people that he conducted funerals for.
Oh, absolutely.
And I said, is there anybody left in Aberdeen? That is an important part of your ministry, I would suppose, in that setting.
Correct. And especially out here when you minister to some people that do not have a church family, they come to these funerals and they know this is the kind of funeral that they appreciate, and this is what they want for their family. And we have non-members coming to ask if we can do their family's funerals as well.
Well, what do you say to that?
Well, it depends on the circumstances, but for the one that I was asked to do, I officiated over at the funeral chapel, not at the church.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they had no problem with that. They just wanted the Lutheran funeral with the rich hymns, with the comfort of the gospel. That's what they were looking for.
Mm. On a more joyous note, some
sure.
Weddings there?
Yes, not as much here. In our congregations, we're going through this, I don't know what you would call it, this period of time where we don't have that age group as prevalent.
Uh-huh.
They're just now getting out of the largest group is getting out of college right now, so I would imagine in the next few years, I'll probably be asked for quite a few.
Well, hopefully those young adults will come back to your community. That's a struggle for places like yours.
Absolutely.
Small towns. What's your population?
We are at, I believe, right around 1,300.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And the problem is, you know, if they can't get back into their family farming, there are not a whole lot of industries here in which they can plug into.
Yeah. That puts you between a rock and a hard place.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm. Do you do any prison ministry?
I've only done one. Mm-hmm. That was a congregational member here that found herself in prison. So I did go there to visit her, but otherwise, no, the prison around here is pretty far away.
Oh, I see. And I guess you've got local law enforcement, of course.
We do.
Yeah. But with everybody knowing everybody else, perhaps it's more like Mayberry's
right.
jail.
It is kind of like that. We only have two cells.
Mm-hmm. Now, being in a remote area, are you able to stay connected with colleagues like Pastor Nabil Noor?
We do talk.
As much as you want?
Not as much as we want. Yeah. If I had a perfect world, if I could afford the drive and the time, I would be tutoring under Pastor Noor for Hebrew.
Yeah.
You know, and things like that. We have that opportunity, but we are so remote out here that the distances won't allow it.
Mm-hmm. So, as a pastor of these two churches, do you set goals for yourself?
Oh, I think every pastor has to set goals for himself.
What are you attempting to do? What would you like to see happen?
What I'd like to see happen is a larger children base. As we know, the children are the future.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in a small community, you want the children to really connect with their church. You want them to know that this is where they belong, and that you want them to know why this is where they belong, so that when they do grow up and when they do go off to college, they remain in the one true faith, and that they can bring others into that faith as well. Even if they cannot come back to this community, you want them to get plugged into the right faith.
That's a critical time in their lives, high school and college.
Most definitely. Especially if throughout those years they're indoctrinated with the secular world's teaching, especially mm-hmm. evolution.
Mm. Especially that. And we talk a lot here on the radio station about the mainstreaming of these alternative agendas, such as evolution, such as the homosexual agenda. And it seems that as if another one's emerging, and that being euthanasia.
Sure. And the more you look at our entertainment, the more you find that the world is slowly but surely putting these elements into our entertainment, both in movies and in television shows. And they are teaching our people, they are teaching us how we should respond to these issues through a secular mindset.
Hmm. Do you regularly visit nursing homes in your area?
Oh, absolutely. In this area, we do have quite a few members that are, how would you say, elderly.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And that is another aspect of the ministry that I was not used to in a city. People just generally seem to live a lot longer out here than what I am used to.
Interesting. And is the quality of life there for them? I mean, are some of these people inspiring for you? And do you hear stories and history about that area and their own personal lives and their travels through the years?
Oh, absolutely. I have one member, a 90-year-old gentleman, who still drives. He and his wife are still, his wife is upper 80s, and they still drive. They still live alone. And he has stories of being in Israel during the Second World War. But he's been around the country as well. And when we visit with these people, I get to learn and I get to grow from listening to them as well. I've been called to minister the word and the sacraments, but they, you know, the Church of All Believers, they also minister to me just by their life and their faith. And when they're facing death, and they tell me exactly what God has done for them and why they are looking forward to their death, that edifies us both.
Hmm. There's a rich heritage there, perhaps, in your community, albeit, you know, very sparsely populated.
Correct. Hmm. Correct.
Any Mormons in your area? There seems to be a mainstreaming of Mormonism going on right now between Glenn Beck and two presidential candidates. Yeah. Mormons are in the news.
Not in this area. We do have one Mormon church that I can think of, but it is, I'd say, at least 50 miles away.
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't affect us as much as I have seen here. They have to be shipped in.
Do your parishioners ask you questions about some of these other belief systems?
They do, especially when I bring it up either in a sermon or in the Bible class. Because we cannot learn our doctrine in a vacuum. We do need to know why we teach, preach, and confess what we do versus what some others may teach, preach, and confess. And when they rub up against their neighbors' elbows and over the coffee are discussing these things, they need to know what we believe and why we believe it. So, yes, we will talk about other faiths, other confessions.
And perhaps that's why you have been called, because your own personal walk is quite a testimony to that.
Well, sure. I at least in my experience or in my past, have that understanding of where somebody else comes from, because I was on the other side, and I was questioning these things as well. And I may know, I like to say I forget most of my upbringing, but I do remember some of these questions and what you think when you ask them. And sometimes that's more important. What is behind the question?
Hmm. And what was perhaps one of your epiphanies as you began learning more about theology?
My greatest epiphany was an adult confirmation class where I realized I was in the wrong church. That was the greatest epiphany. And it came to me in the sense of saying, you mean the Lutherans have had this written down even for over 450 years? What am I doing in this church, struggling to find it myself? That was my greatest epiphany.
I'm wondering why that's such a well-kept secret. Why more people don't find out what you found out?
Well, I think is part of that is a lot of our own church members take it for granted. A lot of our own church members may not even be familiar with our own confessions. They may not even own a Book of Concord. They may not know that the Book of Concord even exists. So when our own people are not being catechized using these materials, we don't know about them and we don't share them.
You could see clearer from the outside looking in, perhaps.
Sometimes I do think so.
Yeah. And then did that inspire you to get fired up? Did you want to tell everybody you knew at the old church?
There is always that, I would call it the human temptation to go back and tell them why they're preaching wrongly. But, you know, that's a human element. I'd rather be able to bring them into the right confession, you know, do it properly and just preach the Word of God to them and let God take care of that. But I learned that most of them don't necessarily want to hear that.
And perhaps because they're so rooted in tradition.
They are. I know that I've been branded the black sheep of the family here and there because I left their confession of faith.
And that must have been a little intimidating.
Not too badly. Really, when my former pastor at that church would challenge me while I was in seminary, mm-hmm. I learned that I knew what I was talking about. I knew the real faith. I knew the Bible. And that was within my first year of seminary. After adult confirmation, I knew that the Lutherans, the LCMS in particular, we have our doctrine. Mm-hmm. And we have it written down, and it comes from Scripture. And that is what converted me, was Scripture. Every question I asked the pastor, he made me read the Scripture for an answer. He didn't give me a human answer. He made me read Scripture. So if I were arguing with anybody, I was arguing with God.
I know what you're talking about, because my wife's family, now I've been to some funerals at Assembly of God churches and Pentecostal churches, and perhaps in your situation, after 1 year of seminary, you knew what your pastor didn't know.
Right.
And as I sit there in the pews, and I'm critically thinking about what's being said, sometimes they get 80%, maybe I'm 80% in agreement with them, but there's always seems to be something missing.
Correct. And I did have an uncle that was a Baptist minister. Uh-huh. And I asked him what requirements there were for him to be a pastor. And he said there weren't any.
Oh.
And that kind of scared me. Because you remember what Christ said about a little leaven. Leaven's the whole lump. And you wonder how much a false doctrine is acceptable. And we all know that there is none. It's not acceptable. And in my flying career, if you're off just a few degrees off your heading, over 100 or 1,000 miles, you're certainly not in the destination you intended to be.
That's a great point, because it is a narrow way, isn't it?
It absolutely is, even though it may seem close enough to some people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess the rooting in tradition, we have listeners of all faith walks tuning into KFUO radio, and more than not, people agree with what they're hearing on this radio station, but yet they stay with what they're familiar with. It's hard to leave that tradition.
It is very hard. I had to leave family. I had to leave church friends. I had to leave my social group. But when you think of the first commandment, that you love God above all things, that really helps you.
Now, you said that your wife, was she a lifelong Lutheran?
Yes.
Okay. It comes from a Lutheran family? And
that is correct.
Mm-hmm. Does she look at her faith differently through your eyes now?
She does. One of the comments that she made over the years that really surprised me the most was when we first started dating, she was the one who knew the doctrine and knew the Bible better than I.
Mm-hmm.
And then she got to watch me grow in my faith and become the spiritual leader.
And perhaps then she had a few epiphanies of her own.
Correct. And I get to teach from that background of not knowing with that enthusiasm of, look what I've learned. And that's one of the things that I've had to deal with becoming a pastor is, what do Lutherans who have been lifelong Lutherans, what do they really already know versus what I have found out? You know, what was new to me? Because justification by faith alone,
mm-hmm.
new to me. But that's everything the Lutheran doctrine stands on. So it's hard for me to come in with this zeal of telling everybody justification by faith in Christ. And they all look at me and say, yeah, we know that.
505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Joe, you're on the radio. You're on KFUO. Good morning.
Hi. I'm part of a non-denominational church, but, you know, definitely a KFUO convert. And I'm just interested in hearing the opinion about where I'm at. I keep thinking, well, all the Christians, all the believers I know, I can still influence them and try to influence them toward Lutheran doctrine, although our church will never be Lutheran, mm-hmm. sure of that. But just, I've often felt like I just love to go hear preaching that isn't skewed away from Lutheran theology, but did you struggle with that before you left?
Can I maybe restate it and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think what Joe's saying, Pastor, is that he can become a missionary in his own church rather than abandon them.
Is that what we're...
That probably, and again, I'm not disputing that, you know, it's a Bible-believing church. It's just,
perhaps you can be an influence there.
Right.
Well, there is a certain amount that you can do in that regard, but the problem that we run into is once a church or a people refuse the truth, then you have a problem of being in their same confession and saying that you agree with them.
Being in fellowship.
Correct.
I think it's more of ignorance than open rebellion, and I guess that's kind of, I think, boy, just to go with the Lutheran Church and be with that group, it'd be such a wonderful thing. And then I think, well, should I? I guess I'm just struggling with it. That I think, but I can influence anybody outside the Lutheran Church as much as I could now, where I'm a part of this body that I'm in.
I agree that would be and is a great opportunity for you to teach those who are still in ignorance. You just have
to
look
for that.
Do I struggle with
that? Yeah. I was just wondering your own personal story, if you struggled with that, or how you came to peace with just heading the direction you went.
Good question, Joe. Thank you.
Yep.
Yes. In my background, we did have to. There was a point in which I said I am in the wrong confession of faith because I have learned the truth, and I have learned that those who I was worshiping with, they refused that truth. And I determined at that time I must part with those who were teaching the false doctrine.
And was that a works righteous kind of approach to theology that your old church had?
Sure.
Yeah.
So many out there are pretty much works righteous, if you want to, you know, overgeneralize to some degree.
Mm-hmm. And on the local level, in your parish, do your people understand that distinction?
They do, but not nearly as well as all of us do, because that is the sin that we all fall back into. We all want works righteousness. We all want to point to something that says, I have done right. I am good to go.
So you've got job security. You got a lot of work to do yet, huh?
But that's the fear that we all have to keep, uh-huh. you know, in front of our own minds.
Boy, I want to thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, and do tell those potential listeners in your parish to tune in for us, okay?
Absolutely.
Thank you. Pastor Kristen Plum, St. John's, Britton, South Dakota, and Peace, Hecla, South Dakota, our guest on Ask the Pastor. Have a good week. Thank you. Coming up next, Moments of Assurance with Pastor Mark Hawkinson on KFUO Radio, a broadcast ministry of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.